So let's go to the other side of the lake, Jesus said to his disciples. And these are some pretty significant words. Up to this point, the whole Gospel of Mark has taken place in a small region around Galilee, centered primarily around Capernaum, a town on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus has just had some debates with the Pharisees. He's taught at the side of the Sea of Galilee. And just before our reading starts for today, he says, well, let's go to the other side of the lake. Now, Rob Bell and his podcast, The Robcast, and I'm going to put a plug in for one episode called Maybe Jesus Doesn't Want You to Follow Him, because it inspired big chunks of this sermon. He does a pretty good job of looking at this invitation to the disciples to cross the sea. A bunch of young, probably men in their late teens and maybe early 20s, and they're traveling across the lake to the exotic Decapolis, or 10 cities. And that's a center of Greek culture. So for these young men who had grown up and lived their whole lives in a small, conservative, Jewish Orthodox community, other than maybe going down to Jerusalem for a feast, this was huge. They'd never left their culture. They'd never left their area. They'd never gone beyond what they knew. And now they were going into the Greek world. Everything they knew, everything they understood, the worldview, their culture, Christ was inviting them to step outside of their experience. And to cap it all off, when they go through a big storm. And so this remnant of primordial chaos seems to create a sort of boundary between their small world and the unknown world beyond them. Mark seems to then, in the story of the exorcism, which is our reading for today, Mark seems to then emphasize a lot of things that show just how far from their culture Jesus had taken them. And there's already a sermon in this. The path of Christ, the path of Jesus, takes us away from the path that we would expect to follow. It takes us further afield than we would ever imagine, and it challenges who we think we are and what we think we know. So think of the location of this story in the gospel. Jesus has just spent some time talking about the rules and laws, hearing the concerns of the Pharisees, and we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. And now here he is, cavorting with Gentiles, meeting a man who is possessed by a demon, who spends all his time with the dead, with a large herd of pigs nearby. All of these things are unclean, they're impure, and this is not an accident that Mark is doing this. This seems pretty intentional. Jesus here is taking his people to new places. He's crossing boundaries. He's going over the rainbow to a place of adventure, of excitement, of mystery, and a little bit of danger. Or perhaps he's going to the upside down for anyone who's a Stranger Things fan. A shadowy world that sort of reflects the world people knew, but much darker. Depending on how you viewed Jesus in the day, he was either going over the rainbow or to the upside down. Now, it's generally accepted, though not universally so, that Mark wasn't great at geography. This is one of the reasons given for the theory that Mark wasn't writing well in Judea, but possibly from Asia Minor or even Rome itself, because there are a number of times in Scripture where his sense of where things are, well, it's a bit off. He says Jesus went from one place to another, but to get there, he goes all over the place. It doesn't make a lot of sense, and this is no different. Gerasa was one of the 10 cities of the Decapolis, but it wasn't on the banks of the Sea of Galilee, as this story seems to indicate. Gerasa was miles, miles inland. There were towns in between, multiple towns in between Gerasa and the Sea of Galilee. And so it's hard to know what's happening here. So where does Mark mean for this story to happen? Well, it's hard to say. It's possible either he or a later editor, Well, they just got it plain wrong. I mean, he seems like he's done that before. It's very possible he just said, yeah, Gerasaw, in that area of the Gerasenes, that's where they went. You know, they thought Gerasaw was on the other side of the lake, and it wasn't. Well, another possibility is that around the time he was writing this, Josephus, the Jewish historian later, records a horrible event occurring. During the Jewish revolt, which many believe was the backdrop or very recent memory for Mark in his writing of the gospel, a massacre happened in a town called Gerasaw. Now, scholars think that this Gerasaw and the other Gerasaw, they're not sure. There's a lot of debate that I found. I couldn't get a clear answer. Many think that they're not the same Gerasaw. Many think that they are the same Gerasaw. So it's sort of unclear, as a lot of history is there. But it's possible to imagine Mark dropping the name Gerasaw because he thought it was where the massacre happened, or because he wanted his audience to make that connection. Josephus writes about this massacre, and it was a massacre where the brutality of the Roman Empire was at its max. They came in and essentially butchered 1,000 people and then some. I won't get into the details, but they did what Rome does. To quote an ancient historian, they made a desert and they called it peace. That's what Rome would do. They'd go into a town, pretty much kill everyone, and say, look at how peaceful we make everything. So when the demon speaks its name, or their name, because they're plural, and it's legion, legion being a term for a Roman military unit, we can imagine Mark's audience saying, in Gerasaw? Yeah, obviously this guy's demon is named legion. If he saw the violence, if he was affected by it in some way, and given the scale of it, how could he not? Well, that's going to hit him. And that's going to hit him pretty hard. So again, there is debate about what this reference to Gerasaw is and whether this is the Gerasaw that it happened in. But whether or not this is an allusion Mark is making, we still have here a story about trauma. Now, I'm using trauma here through a spiritual lens. And so the way I'm thinking about trauma here is anything that impedes us from being our true self. Anything that wounds us so greatly that we create defenses which stop that part of ourselves made in God's image from coming forth. So here we have a man who is so full of demons, who lives among the tombs. He's so fully broken, so fully wounded, so fully distorted from who he was made to be, that it's though he is overrun with demons. Now, Mark may be saying that empire causes this trauma. The violence used to maintain order is a wounding force in the world. And that can affect us directly. You know, if Rome did come into this guy's village and decimate people, no wonder he's got the wounds of empire. No wonder he's carrying this tremendous amount of trauma as he tries to shield himself from whatever pain he's encountered in the world. I think of our Indigenous sisters and brothers affected by the colonial policies of Canada over the past couple hundreds of years, up to and including today. And we saw in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission testimonies and report the way that lives have been broken. We hear stories of this imperial mode of control wounding people so greatly, forcing such great defenses to be built, well, that some people are no longer able to even function in the world, falling to the worlds of addiction, to violence, to rage and fear as they try to cope and process everything that has wounded their lives. The demons that caused the trauma have taken over lives. I would wager that, or I would say myself, that empire can even cause trauma to those who have not had violence directly committed against them. I think all of us are wounded by the colonial practices of our culture. We're denied relationships that would bring forth to bear our full selves. Without those relationships, we see the corrupting influence of demons, and just to be clear, I'm using demons metaphorically here, manifested in overt racism of white supremacy, or in the inert racism that many of us carry as white liberals. But even if Mark is not talking about the violence of empire, we still see a man so wounded, so broken by these demons, that they have taken control over him. And all of us have been wounded such that we have built defenses that block our true selves, that block our Christ selves from becoming manifested in this world. Now, it can come from systemic or cultural injustice. It can come from specific traumatic events in our lives. It can come from our family of origin. It can come from all sorts of different places. It can come out of the grief of losing someone, for example, which is a natural part of many of our lives. Rob Bell puts it well. Sometimes after a loss, we just stop. The pain of that loss dictates everything we do, such that we don't open up ourselves to the possibility of relationship again. These wounds, these demons, they can come from many places. As many places as there are people, and more. And all of us carry them. All of us have trauma or wounds or brokenness from our past, which greatly affects who we are today. Sometimes it's so bad that we can't even function in the world anymore. The beauty of who we were made to be, the part of ourselves made in God's image, has been so battered that our lives become controlled by the very thing, the very being, the very events that traumatized us in the first place. We don't need to look too far to see that in the world. This is the state that the Gerasene demoniac is found in, banished to the tomb, sometimes even being chained down, whatever is haunting him, whatever those demons are that he carries, he can't move beyond. And sometimes we do still function in the world. This would probably be most of us, though I suspect we often think we function better than we actually do. But I suspect most of us have some baggage, some wound, some brokenness that we carry into the world, into our lives with us. We may not even know where it comes from. We may not even be able to name it, but it's there. It affects everything that we do. It affects who we are. I think of my own way that I engage in conflict as an example. You know, Jackie's here, so she knows passive-aggressive Tim. Poor Jackie. You know, and that comes out of some place of origin stuff for me, right? That I'm not able to just fully express, well, this is what's pissing me off today. You know, I have to do it sideways. And it's a small example of it, but it's still, it's that idea. That some part of me, some part of who I am, I'm not able to bring forth to its fullness. We all carry baggage from our lives that impacts who we are and how we go about everything in our days. As I said, it could be an injustice or an oppression. It could come from our families of origin, our griefs, our losses, whatever it is. But how we cope with these traumas, large or small, that formation of our egos, those habits that we create that help us deal with that event, that deal with that trauma, that help us survive and get by, well, they can become walls that we put up. Saying, I'm never going to be hurt like that again. It could be addictions that form. It could be just how we interact with people. This is a story about Christ healing a man's trauma. It's the story about Jesus healing a man. And ultimately, there's a promise here, a promise that we need to hear. Part of that is being able to name those demons and cast them out. You know, once we can name them, we have power over them. If we can own it, if we can say who or what they are, well, then we have a little more say. Then we can recognize them a little bit better and have a little bit more way of dealing with them. But it's more than that. There's a deeper promise there. Now, there are forces that long to hold us back, to keep us in the state of, we'll call it possession, but again, I mean that metaphorically. There are forces that long to keep us in a state of possession. Look at how the crowd responded to Jesus after he did this. They want him to go away. You'd think they'd be like, this is great, stay, please, help. But they're like, get out of here. This is what gets in the way. This is what stops us from healing, from developing, from reconciling ourselves with who we were made to be, from the part of ourselves made in God's image. It's human systems, human designs, very often our own human ego. Those very defenses we have built to protect ourselves from the trauma, they're conspiring in many ways to keep us in a stalled state of possession. But the promise here remains, and it's a big one. Because this is a story about how the forces that created the universe, that bind it together, about how something holy and present in the world longs for us to be made whole. Yes, parts of the world, including parts you yourself have created, may conspire to keep you bound in tombs with the dead, but the universe, the incarnate presence of love, that which knits you together, and I mean the real you, your true self, the self that perhaps you may not even fully know, that which knits you together is actively working to tear down those walls. To name those demons, those pains which still haunt you. And to call forth who you were made to be. Thanks be to God. Amen.